Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with, I almost said Michael Krog. Michael from Sweden. And, oh, wait a minute, hold on.
Don't let them take your guns away.
One of my favorite songs.
Don't let them take your guns away.
It's not supposed to play that. All right, I have to open it up so I can find where it's playing. Here it is. Kill, kill. Kill switch. There we go. All right. That's not the play we called. So, yeah, and I was just getting ready to say, as in terms of a play on words, we're going to be talking about linguistics today. Okay. And some of the differences primarily here between the Germanic and other related languages. Hebrew and Germanic, I think, is where we're at in today's document. And I have to bring that up on my screen as well. So, Michael, how are you today?
I'm doing very good.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Beautiful day.
Yeah.
We had an interesting discussion before also about accusations that you get accused of to bringing up some very obvious verses from the Bible.
Right, right. And so what we're again, it's Norse Israelitish origins by Michael Krog, and we're at the point of the entry here that says Germanic Semitic similarities, and we'll get there momentarily, but I understand you have a concern or two before we get into there.
Yeah, and I had questions for you. How would you, we see now how the world is, and this upside down. And we in the identity movement are describing this as Jacob's trouble.
Yes.
Could it be viewed in any other way? Because I can only see this as Jacob's trouble. Or, I don't know, because if you point that out, look in the Western world, look at the American, how you are treated right now with this COVID hoax. This is for me. But that is also the problem to know who is Jacob and who is Esau. Or it could they be spiritualized like the Esau is the one that rejected Christ and Jacob be the one that did receive him? I don't So Jacob's trouble was my question, and how does we in identity Jacob's trouble?
Oh yeah, well we are definitely Jacob. The Jews are Esau, and the Jews aren't in any trouble whatsoever, right? In these end times, these are the times of Jacob's troubles. And unfortunately, part of our trouble is that we don't know who we are. I mean, if you're running around having amnesia, which is actually what is going on here, we don't know who we are and why anything is happening to us. In fact, we have been trained to believe that the Jews are Jacob, but they don't fit any of the marks of Jacob. I mean, they don't have any huge armies. They don't have any huge navies. They never have been a blessing to the world like we have. I mean, all you have to do is follow the marks of Israel, and you can see instantly that the Jews don't fit any of those marks, but they do fit the marks of Esau, okay, who has always been a curse. And the Edomites are part of the reason why Jacob is in trouble today, okay? If you don't understand that, then you really don't understand the Bible, okay? So
yeah.
That's what I would say. That is so well
described. That is, the view on Genesis 3:15, and that is a literal seduction that did happen to Eve. It is not the spiritual stuff that I guess the
right.
Judeo-Christians want to put on you. It is a spiritual stuff, and you try to do your gymnastic to get around it, but you have probably heard all of them, Eli.
Spiritual gymnastics, denying the literal meanings of the words, but also here's another area where the Judeo-Christians really lack scholarship. They don't study the idioms, because ancient Hebrew and every language, really, has very prominent idioms that do not mean, that cannot be taken literally. And if you don't know that you're dealing with an idiom, then you completely misunderstand what's being said. And, Dan from Georgia and I have been talking about the evenings and the mornings of Genesis, okay? So those who want to translate that literally say, well, that means a literal 24-hour day. But let me ask you, Michael, is it 24 hours from evening to morning?
No. Once again, here, please.
Yeah, it says the evening and the morning was the first day, but how many hours are there between evening and morning? 24 or 12?
Okay, yeah,
All
okay.
right, see where I'm going with this?
Yeah,
So,
maybe, yeah, huh?
yeah, it doesn't say it's a 24-hour day. It
No,
says nothing of the kind. All right, but
no.
because somebody told you that's what it means, you never bothered to check it out. You just blindly follow the false teaching. Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. As you said. Isn't it also the eon, that integration of the eon,
Yeah,
not
so if
doing the
yeah, so if somebody tells you that the Jews are Israel and you never bother to check, well, I mean, what proof is there that the Jews are Israelites? Yeah, it's just a lie that's been repeated for 2,000 years, and it has taken many of us that long to wake up, right, to the fact that that is a lie, okay? So, and this is a matter of linguistics, and that's the study we're going to be doing today, the Germanic Semitic similarities. And so we have to pay attention. When we're doing Bible research, we have to pay attention to idioms. We have to have a concordance in one hand and a Bible in the other, because if you do not understand the true meanings of the Hebrew words and you simply accept the modern dogma or the modern traditions that have been created by poor scholarship. Poor scholarship and sometimes very deceptive scholarship. Okay. Yeah. For example, as I was doing research for this morning show, I found out that it was actually the Jews who created a lot of these myths about the Old Testament that people believe today. Okay. And they're Talmudic in origin, not biblical in origin. And again, here the Judeo-Christians don't even understand that the Jews do not believe in the Bible. They believe in the Talmud, which is simply their commentaries to the Bible. So that's because they have not done any research into Judaism, simply believe the lie when the rabbis say, "We are the Israelites and you are the Goyim." Right? They believe it. Never bother to
Yeah,
check if it's true.
I guess
Yeah.
I don't know how common it is in America, but could it also be the disbelief that, oh, but hey, we that believe in Jesus Christ are also Jews when we believe in Jesus, so we are all Jews,
Yeah.
and Jews believes in Jesus as well? I don't know.
Well, there's not one Jew on this planet that I know that actually believes in Jesus. They all hate Jesus. They're brought up to hate Jesus. So there's no such thing as a Jewish Christian or a Judahite Christian, which of course Judah is one of the tribes of Israel. All right, but they don't even know that much. They don't even know that the 12 tribes were broken up into two houses: a house of Judah, including Benjamin, and a house of Israel, the other 10 tribes. They don't even know that. They think Jews. They think the word Jew is the equivalent of all 12 tribes. No, it's not. It's not even a meaning of the tribe of Judah, right? Because Judah was an Israelite, and the Jews are descendants of Esau. Okay, so yeah, these are the days of Jacob's trouble, because we're Jacob. Esau is not in trouble. In fact, the prophecy that Isaac made to Esau said, "The day will come where you will break Jacob's yoke from off your neck." So I would challenge any Judeo-Christian, tell me when that happened. When did the Edomites break Jacob's yoke from off their neck? Well, that's when the times of Jacob's trouble began, when the Edomites, namely the house of Rothschild and their Jewish banking pals and their rabbis' pals, began their ascendancy over us in the modern world. Okay? They don't understand that prophecy because they don't know the difference between Esau and Jacob.
Yeah, I fully agree with that.
Yeah.
And could that
Okay.
be when Napoleon was defeated at Waterloo?
That's right, at Waterloo. And that was the first big money that the Rothschilds made, by telling people that Napoleon won at Waterloo, and that crashed the economy of England. And the Rothschilds were able to buy up the securities of the British government at at a penny on a dollar, or well, they have pounds, right? They have pennies and pounds. So they don't even know that. Okay, they don't know the history of the world, and they think they can just read the Bible with their false assumptions and know what they're talking about. No, it doesn't work that way. You've got to know history. You've got to know biblical history. You've got to know archaeology. You have to know real history, and you have to even know some science to be able to talk intelligently about the Bible. But the vast majority of the 33,500 denominations don't do any of that. They just have a set dogma, and that's all they teach. So that makes it very difficult for us to talk with these people, because they're so set in their ways that they don't have an open mind to... Here we're talking about the Bible here. If you don't know the meanings of the words in the original Hebrew and the original Greek, then you will have a problem understanding what it says. You know, but they don't worry about that, because they already believe they know everything there is to know about the Bible. No, they're very dramatically wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. They're prideful. And yes. May I also read something from Obadiah and see who is fitting for this?
Okay.
Obadiah 1:1. Division of Obadiah. Thus said the Lord God concerning Edom. We have heard rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent among the heathen. Arise ye, and let us rise up against her in battle. Behold, I have made thee small among the heathen. Thou art greatly despised. The pride of thine heart has deceived thee. Thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, that said in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? So, Eli, these three verses, what do we think when you see? Thou art small among the heathen.
Right.
Thou art greatly despised. Who can that be?
Well, aren't the Jews a very small group of people compared to other nations? And haven't they been greatly despised and still are today throughout history?
That, and also concerning Edom. Here we have Edom. And
that's
also
right.
Have the descriptions here of thou that dwelleth in the cleft of the rock.
Right.
Well, I think about the skyscrapers in New York City.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously that's a literal reference to the territory of Edom, that dry desert type land, although, you know, it's not a total desert. It has a lot of scrub brush and grasses that they can feed their goats with, right? So it's not a total desert. But yeah, the Jews are not farmers. They don't have the lush green pastures, or pastors for that matter, that we do, okay? So Israel is a farming community. The Jews are not. The Jews have never been farmers. I mean, just check their history. They have never been farmers. Okay? So here's another mark of Israel that doesn't fit the Jews. So, but they don't think in these terms. They simply believe, well, I've heard this lie so many times that I never realized it was a lie. Right? Okay? So this shows what a difficult proposition it is for us to get the truth across. But there was a very good, somebody in the chat room this morning put this saying in the chat room. And let me get it really quickly here. It is, the truth is still the truth, even if no one believes it. A lie is still a lie, even if everyone believes it. The author is that guy unknown, right? So, okay, that's where we're at.
A comment is that creates a lot of propaganda to keep a lie standing.
Okay, you were breaking up there. Repeat that, please.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of propaganda.
Oh yeah,
to keep the lie standing.
Mountains of propaganda, the mountains of Edom, mountains of propaganda, right? Yeah, and so you can also take that the clefts of the rock figuratively, meaning, well, the same curse that was given to Nahash in Genesis 3:14-15, you will crawl on your belly, okay, and eat the dust of the Israelites, eat the dust of the Edomites, right? Well, that is literally what the Edomites, who are today known as Jews, did. They were the servants of Jacob, eating our dust. We told them what to do, and they had to follow orders because we had a military power over them, That was ended at the Battle of Waterloo, and now they have the ascendancy over us. And if you don't see the connection here, that the Edomites and Jews are the same people, then you really cannot understand the Bible. So we're here to correct that defect in Christian thinking. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, that's the basic of our understanding is Genesis 3:15. That is where everything starts.
That's where it started.
The key of the Bible for you to understand it. Then the Bible makes sense. Then you start to understand it, because the Bible is about Jacob. And then it also describes his enemies, of course, but it's about Jacob and his descendants. It's a book of genetics.
That's right.
The center of the book.
It is the book of genetics, absolutely. Yes, yes. Okay, and I almost forgot. I wanted to bring in, now we just talked about the Judeo-Christians. Let's talk about the other side of the spectrum. This is from the Odinist website, odinbrotherhoodforum.com. And the question I put into the browser was, what's the origin of the word Edda? Because it seems so similar to the Indo-Aryan word Veda. I mean, and both reflect the writings of the Aryan, Indo-Aryans, and the writings of the Norse Aryans. Okay, so, and we're going to be talking about linguistics today. So here's the answer that the Odin Brotherhood gives. The Vedas are the oldest sacred writings of the Aryans. The Eddas are the newest. The Vedas are the scriptures of the Hindus, but that is not actually true. Hinduism is actually a very new religion. It didn't appear on the scene until about 300 BC. Okay, Hinduism is a conglomeration of every possible tradition in India, all collected by a group of priests, probably even some Jewish rabbis, and then they claim that these scriptures are theirs. No, the Aryans are a completely different group of people, the Indo-Aryans. They actually descend from Abraham. We know this because their god Brahman is our god, our ancestor Abraham. Because Abraham sent these people to the east. They're the sons of Keturah. That's who the Indo-Aryans are. The Odinists need to know that, and so do the Judeo-Christians. They also need to know that. But he continues. So it's not the scriptures of the Hindus. Anything under the sun qualifies as Hinduism. But the religion of the Vedas is similar to our religion. They're talking about Odinism. The Vedas contain no yoga, no reincarnation, no nonviolence, no caste, and no vegetarianism. I would say, the Vedas have a caste system because the Indo-Aryans ruled over the existing tribes of India, and they stayed away from it. If he's saying there's no caste within the Indo-Aryans, that's correct. But if he's talking about how the Indo-Aryans related to the other inhabitants of India, then that would be incorrect. So, but this can be said about the Bible. The Bible contains no yoga, no reincarnation, no nonviolence, no caste. It's only about Israel, and we're supposed to be equals among ourselves, and no vegetarianism. Okay? He says, cows were slaughtered and eaten and were flayed for leather. They were also used for milk. The Aryans of the Vedas were polygamous, patriarchal, proud of their genealogies. They were tent dwellers, tough, and warlike. What does the word Scythian mean? Tent dweller. According to Rig Veda 7:21.5, the invading Aryans called native population of India the black-skinned devils, whose god is the phallus, right? That's what the Bible says about them. What is old becomes corrupt. That is why modern Hinduism is so different from the Vedic religion. Thank you very much. Okay? So given what they just said, they should realize that the people, the Indo-Aryans, practice a Brahmanic, i.e. Abrahamic, religion. All right? So I just wanted to throw that in there. All right? Okay, and of course, you being a Norse Israelite, I don't know to what extent do you have any dealings with Odinists in your part of the world, but they basically he just pointed out there's some major differences between the Vedas and the people who lived there before the Indo-Aryan invasion, and that Indo is very similar to the Bible. Okay, we're okay.
And a comment there, Eli. So when I said no caste system, isn't that something that did exist? The Indo-Aryans had that. Isn't that a trace of that system that they built up? Because I guess the Indo-Aryans, the white, they were segregating themselves among themselves.
Yes, yeah, and but it's also a fulfillment of Genesis 1, 28 through 31, where the commandment to go and take dominion of the world, of the planet, was given only to the Adamites, not to all races. So we see that happened in India as well. Okay, so here again, the Bible is true if you dare to understand it. It's true historically, it's true literally, it's true idiomatically, right? And linguistically, we see the linguistic connection here. We were just about to discuss the linguistic connection between Germanic and Semitic. Everybody agrees that Germanic is an Indo-Aryan language, but we're saying Germanic is also a Semitic language. There is no difference between Indo-Aryan and Semitic. So we'll turn it over to you. That's where we're going to start today.
Yes, we are. Oh, I have an echo now.
Oh, okay. I'll see if I maybe I could, if I turn the volume down on my headset, maybe that'll help. Let me try to do that.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I go on. It do this a fair time. The old Hebrew Bible usually considered belonging to the Hamito-Semitic languages, where Germanic, Norse, and English belong to the Indian of languages. One of the most respected linguistics of the world was our own Louis Hjelmslev of the University of Copenhagen. In 1963, Hjelmslev wrote his landmark book, Language, an Introduction, that. Do you want to read on? An echo.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Helmslev wrote in his landmark book, Language and Introduction, that, quote, a genetic relationship between Indo-European and Hamito-Semitic was demonstrated in detail by the Danish linguist Hermann Müller using the method of element functions in studies dating from 1906 to 1917. Okay, and that's what we've been saying here at Eurofolk Radio all along, that Germanic and Semitic are, Germanic is a Shemitic, not Semitic, Shemitic language, because the Israelites were Aryans, not Jews, okay? And the linguists of the world have got it all wrong because they also believe Jewish lies, okay? All right, now are you on a headset or on a speaker? Is
I have a speaker.
Oh, okay, that is
Now it's
more
gone. Now it's
okay.
though gone, so I can
Yeah.
continue now.
Okay, go ahead.
By comparing them, Hjelmslev substantiated the claims for the Semitic Indo-European and Finno-Ugarian languages were derived from one single original ancient language, which he called Nostrek. No, Nostrek.
Nostratic,
Hjelmslev.
but I think he should call it Hebrew.
Yeah, me too.
Back to you. Okay.
Hjelmslev did not believe that other languages, such as Chinese and the American Indian languages, had a common origin with Nostratic.
Okay,
But
now.
caveat there, I guess, is that the Indians that were Celt, didn't they spoke Hebrew because of those
Yes.
that yeah sorry.
Yeah, the American Indians, yeah, the Celtic and Gaelic. If you actually listen to the American Indian languages, like even in their chants, you can hear the name of Yahweh in there. And America is loaded with proto-Hebrew Hebrew script, you know, the stick figure script, where they carried the name of Yahweh with them in stick figures. So there's all kinds of evidence that it's just you really have to study this carefully. And much of this research is very recent in origin, like in the last 20 or 30 years, such as the book The Mystic Symbol by Mertz, I believe her name was. She documented the existence of the name of Yahweh in inscriptions in America all over the place, from the eastern seaboard as far west as New Mexico, and here in Illinois and Michigan, etc. But you know how dialects change over centuries, or even over a few years, dialects can change. And since most of these people lost the right, the art of writing, that you find it, there is very little evidence, but those inscriptions are proof that Hebrew was brought over to America by our ancestors. Absolute proof.
Yes, further proofs who we are. Yes. More proof to you dear Christians.
Oh yeah, the other book. Sorry to interrupt. The other book is America B.C. by Barry Fell. He documents all kinds of cases of the similarities between ancient Hebrew, Gaelic, and other languages that the, and even English, that the white settlers brought to America. Okay, back to you.
Yes, that book still to be found. I have heard about it, American BC.
Yeah, you can find that. That's still readily available. The Mystic Symbol is not as readily available. It might be on Amazon. It might be.
Yeah, this is very intriguing histories to read, and something to read for everybody to know that the histories before this, what do you say, Christopher Columbus, that he didn't discover America.
Right.
No.
Right.
No, it was Solomon's boat.
That's right. Yeah, and the boats of the so-called Phoenicians, which everybody says are Indo-Aryans, but the sailors on those ships were Israelites of the various tribes, right? But it's quite likely that the businessmen, the people who ran the corporation of Tyre, were Canaanites. But they needed good sailors, and the good sailors were provided by the 12 tribes of Israel. So Phoenician, the Phoenician language, is primarily Hebrew. It's Hebrew. Most philologists will say there is no difference between Phoenician and Hebrew. But which came first, Michael?
Yeah, Hebrew.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to you.
Mm, okay. The American Terry Marvin Blodgett, University of Utah, summarized his account in the doctoral thesis from 1984, Phonological Similarities in Germanic and Hebrew. The findings of this chapter open up the possibility that the linguistic similarities between Germanic and Hebrew, as presented throughout this dissertation, might be explained as the basis of Hebraic migrations to Germanic territory, possibly as early as 700 BC, with other groups arriving during the ensuing centuries.
Okay, yeah, and that's by Terry Marvin Blodgett, Phonological Similarities in Germanic and Hebrew, page 155, okay? So, and then they have a little chart here showing where the Germanic-speaking peoples live, and they're primarily in the north of Europe, okay? But then we have the Indo-Aryans, who are also from the Middle East, but east of the Euphrates River, okay? The Shemites were the Aryans who stayed within that territory. And the Japhethites are Aryans who went primarily north and east, although they went as far west as Greece, because Greek is the language they developed. And our people picked that up when the Israelites merged with them in Europe. Okay, every one of these migrations trails is proof that the Aryans were in all these places. And when the Hebrews merged with the Japhethites in Greece, they were the same race. There's no record that the Hebrew invaders, and that's what they were at the time, the Hebrew invaders, the Israelites, who eventually merged with the Celtic world and with the Greek world and the Roman world. These people were all Aryans, and most of them, in fact, were Israelites. The Israelites actually became the predominant people in these areas over the other Aryans. Back to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, yeah, so see on this map, we see that the Germanic-speaking peoples are, yeah, Germany mainly, and then we have Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. And then also England, Great Britain is also included in this.
Anglo-Saxons, yes.
Anglo-Saxons people of the world. Okay, let's continue then. Blodgett also showed in details that the vowels changes ablaut and umlaut. Okay, today known in High German, was common both in Hebrew and Germanic languages.
Very good.
But not in other Indo-European languages.
Yeah, well, when Abraham sent the sons of Keturah east, they lost that. Right? They probably picked up local language habits in India, okay? And they lost the umlaut, and the umlaut on the U is U, which is not common in English or many other languages. U, okay? And the umlaut over the O is E. You know, you don't get that in, probably, in, maybe you have it in French. I think you may have that in French. But English lost it, and probably the other Nordic languages lost it, but that it was originally there. Back to you.
Yeah, well, we have those different ones, E. So mm-hmm. We have that one also.
Yeah, about the only remnant of the pronunciation "ü" is when Americans say "ü," that stinks, right? But we do know how to pronounce it. All right, back to you.
Okay, the Polish linguistic Grzegorz Gors Jago de Sinski, sorry for butchering that,
yeah,
came
Polish.
To the same conclusion in 2005 in his critical comparisons between the Indo-European and Semitic languages. It is worth noticing that there exists especially much convergence between the Semitic languages and the Germanic branches of the Indo-European languages. And that he has added that.
Yes.
And I won't take his name again. It's Indo-European and Semitic languages, 2005.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this is just scratching the surface. There's been so much written about the connection between Hebrew and Aryan languages that it amazes me that any modern linguist could not understand this. However, these books are suppressed. Books that have been written on this subject are deliberately suppressed, and the Jews control the publishing world. And that's why these academics in the modern world have no understanding of this whatsoever. Back to you.
Yes. Oh, and some more here. This is reflected in Norse names. The Hebrew Kohen means priest. Old Norwegian Kon means a wealthy man or chief. The Lithuanian Kunigas means Lord Priest. Today, Priest King.
Yeah.
Swedish Rus Viking in Constantinople. Rus Vikings, could that have something to do with Russia?
Yeah, right. Rus, absolutely. Russia is named after the Rus Vikings. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, the Swedish Rus Vikings. Were specifically referred to as Jarl, meaning uncircumcised by the Judahites, I think it should be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It could be either in this case, yeah. It probably is Jews because those were Ashkenazim, not Hebrews, in Constantinople. Although there could have been Judahites because, Greek Orthodox world and the Russian Orthodox world is obviously Hebrew, Israelite, okay? So if he's referring to the church Israelites, then it would be Judah. If he's referring to the Ashkenazim, who lived not far from Constantinople, it would be Jews, okay? So we'd have to be very specific and locate the precise area he's talking about. Back to you.
Yeah. That's why it's so important to know who is who and who is Judahites or Jews.
Right.
That's exactly. Very important. In the Hebrew Bible, non-Israelites are mainly referred to with the Hebrew goyim. Well, I don't know, really.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it's that's a biblical tradition that's continued by mainstream Judeo-Christianity, but that's incorrect. The fact is that when Rebekah had Esau and Jacob in her womb, she asked Yahweh, "Why are my two unborn children fighting with each other in my womb?" And Yahweh answered, "Because there are two goyim in your womb." Okay, nations. It simply means nations. What? Because the Jews refer to non-Jews as goyim, which is incorrect Hebrew. Other people believe, well, that must be what it means. No, it's not. The word goyim simply means nation. That's all it means. And you have to determine from the context which nation is being talked about. Back to you.
Yeah, so this could be Hebrew nations. It could be the dispersions. I don't know if that is the one that's described here.
Well, let's, maybe he talks about that in the next sentence. Let's see.
We'll see. But the 10 tribes were indeed Israelites, albeit uncircumcised.
There you go.
Yeah, yes. It was the dispersion.
Mm-hmm.
The Norwegian pagan chief Håkon Jarl, whom Danish King Harald Bluetooth baptized on Limfjord, would in Hebrew be Håkon Jarl, meaning uncircumcised Israelitish priest king.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. And you would expect that the Druids, the semi-paganized priests of Britain, who were also Israelites, and the apparel they wore was very similar to the priests of Israel. They had a tradition that they would have a savior named Yehu, or no, I'm sorry, Yezu. Where'd they get that from? If they weren't Israelites, okay?
Yeah, and we are the only one that should care about that, that knows about that.
That's right.
Everybody else wouldn't care, really. They just are.
Very good. Okay. Uncircumcised, yeah. Israelitish priest king. Very good.
Yeah. There are overt and acknowledged Hebrew loanwords in English. Dr. Isaac Moseonson.
Something
like learned, that. Yeah, a learned Jew from Yeshiva universities in Jerusalem and New York, spent many years on the matter of Hebrew Indo-European relationship. In his solid work, The Word, the dictionary that reveals the Hebrew source of English, from 1989, Dr. Moseonson brought
Moseon.
Light.
Moseon, probably. It's about as good. Moseon. There might be an extra syllable in there. Hard to say. Back to you.
Yeah. Brought to light no less than 22,000 English words with a Hebrew origin. Yeah, well, he dig up that. See that we are Israelites.
Like camel. In Hebrew, it's gamel with a G. It's just that the G is a little harder than the C. But it's a Hebrew word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back in Genesis 2:19 until 20, Adam gave all the animals names. Countless people must have puzzled over which name Adam did give the animals, and just why he gave each one of them their specific names. Dr. Moseonson showed that the English word giraffe in the Hebrew has a meaning of neck.
So giraffe means neck in Hebrew. Okay, so we took the word neck in Hebrew, and because giraffes have such long necks, right? So we applied it to that animal. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and here another one also probably. The English word skunk has in Hebrew a meaning of stink.
Okay.
To be honest, I have never experienced those skunk. So
You have to come to America just to experience it. It's unmistakable. If somebody ran over a skunk on the highway 10 hours ago, you would still smell it, maybe for several days. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that is extensive. Yes. No, we have no skunk, but it's the same. I guess it's the same Name in Swedish, skunk. It's the same
Yes.
word for this one. And the English horse, a Hebrew meaning of plower. Yeah, that's what the horse is used to, among
Right.
other.
Yeah. Now it's interesting in German the word for horse is Pferd, Pferd, Pferd. And I'll bet there's a relationship to Hebrew with that as well. Back to you.
Yeah, and this is intriguing, reading those with the name that they have this, that he did put. Yeah, here we see also the connection of who did create Hebrew. And wasn't that a son to Adam? He Heber or something like this. He Hebrew, what was his
Well,
name?
Eber was a descendant of Adam. You know, his direct descendant was not Shem. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Sorry, folks. But in
Okay.
gen yeah, it wasn't Cain. Seth is the word. I'm getting the S w confused with the sh sound. Seth, not Sheth. Seth. Okay, back to you.
Okay, just think, the most ancient language of the Bible from the Garden of Eden can to this very day be heard in both English and Hebrew.
Yeah, that's
What about,
correct. Yes, go ahead. You had a
yes,
question.
and what about that, you Judeo-Christians that denies that the Anglo-Saxon people are the ancient Hebrews? We are the Semitic people. We are, no one else.
We are the true Shemites. The Jews are imposters, and they are Canaanites and Edomites, and they're derived from Cain. And around the year before BC, at the end of the BC period, is when the Canaanite Edomites began infiltrating the house of Judah and posing as priests. Those are the Pharisees of the Bible. They are not Israelites, they are Edomites, folks. If you don't know that, then you don't understand the Bible. Yahshua said about the Israelites that they are my sheep and they follow me. Of the Pharisaic Edomites, he said, ye are not my sheep. Okay?
Except you're not my sheep. How plain can that be to say?
It's very
And they
plain.
were the Edomites that would like to, yeah, kill him. And he said as well, you want to kill me.
That's right. That's right. Now, here we get into some really good stuff because the appearance of the Israelites has always been assumed by most people, and for people who are listening to our material for the very first time, the Israelites were Aryans. They were not hook-nosed, slanted forehead, crooked lip, crooked eye Jews. All right, they have an Aryan appearance, and that's true throughout history. Now, because the Israelites were forbidden to make images of themselves, there are no such statues in ancient Israel. However, other cultures made drawings of our ancestors, and I think that's what this next section is all about, the appearance of the Israelites. Back to you.
Yeah, and isn't it also now we talked about Buddha. Wasn't also the ancient, what do you say, statue of Buddha? Wasn't that more he had more the appearance of an Israelite?
Or David. Yeah, I think you're probably referring to the statues and appearance of David, who was an Israelite. He did not have a hooked nose. In fact, the Bible says David was ruddy and fair.
Yeah, of course, he was the one beloved by our Creator. He said it was an apple of his eye.
Right. And ruddy means to have a pinkish skin, to show blood in the face, and fair means white. That
Yes.
doesn't describe Jews. Back to you.
No, it doesn't. This is the Israelite. This is David, and he did pray 7 times per day. That is